And we have this phrase, it says, likewise your husband dwell with them according to knowledge, speaking of the relationship of the husband to the wife. And we want to continue now to deal with some of the facts that the Bible gives us that would be the part of this knowledge that the husband should have as he dwells with his wife. And as we mentioned, not only is it something for the husband to know, but it's also something for the wife to know. We've already covered many of the scriptures that do deal with the duties of husbands, the duties of husbands to the wife and to the family and the home. Now we're going to turn this morning and begin to deal with some of the duties of the wife. And just as we had many duties that applied to husbands, we also have many duties that apply to wives. But this is the only way that a person could carry out this scripture in 1 Peter 3 and 7 would be to know what God has laid out as the knowledge. Now, you can consult all of the marriage manuals and all of the books on psychiatry and psychology and all this, but you're not going to find the things that really are needed to be known by a husband until you consult the master plan for man, which is God's Word, the Bible. So as we look, we find there are many scriptures that do shed light upon the duties of wives to husbands and to the family and the home. But one of the first principles that we've found is in Ephesians 5 and 21, where he tells the wife to be subject to the husbands in all things, and to do this as unto the Lord. And we know that they're to do it in fear of the Lord. So this great principle of subjection now still has a scarlet thread runs through all of the relationships in the home. Wives subject to the husbands, and husbands having such a great love and care for the wife that they'll do nothing that would in any wise cause a hardship upon them. And of course, we're going to learn later, children subject to parents. And this same thread of subjection also runs in the church, where we're told to be subject one to another, where to let each one esteem other man better than themselves, and so on. So it's a very important lesson, and one of the prime duties of wives is to have this thing of subjection. I would like to turn here to 1 Peter 5, beginning with the ninth verse. 1 Peter 5, beginning with the ninth verse, and here we're going to learn some teachings about those women who were counted as widows indeed, who were to be taken into the number, that is, they were to be taken under the care or the wardship of the church, and the church was to provide for their needs in return for these women's services to God. And as we find those qualities, though, given to widows indeed, we find some things that necessarily are duties of wives. He begins 1 Timothy 5, verse 9. Let not a widow be taken into the number under threescore years old, which would mean that she should be the age of 60 years old, having been the wife of one man. Now here's one of the qualifications, but yet it's also one of the duties of wives to having been the wife of one man. Over and over and over, we find that the great principle of the Bible is that there be one husband and should be one wife. We do not have any leeway in the Bible for a man to have multiple wives or for a woman to have multiple husbands. And certainly this would indicate those that are living. We're not talking about somebody that has had a husband to die and is no longer a husband or is no longer a wife and there's no tie, there's no marriage. They couldn't be said to have two husbands or two wives if they remarried after one has died. And as a matter of fact, he even tells these younger women to go ahead and to marry again. And that would be a contradiction if the marrying again constituted having two husbands at one time. But they are to be the wife of one husband. And, the wife of one man. And here again we're reminded of God's teaching about divorce and remarriage. In this duties of husbands and wives to husbands, they must enter into this marriage relationship with the full, firm understanding that this is for life. It's for the life of both of us. Now, until one of us dies, as long as we're both living, this thing cannot be dissolved, it cannot be changed, it cannot be altered. That is our husband. And certainly the man has the same attitude towards the wife. Then he goes on in verse 10 and says, well reported of for good works. well reported of for a good work. This woman is to have an apparel that she wears that is noticeable by others around about her, that is known as good works. In 1 Timothy 2, he says, for her not to adorn herself manners other than to have modest apparel, with shamefaced and sobriety, not with broidered hair or gold or pearls of costly array, but which becometh women professing godliness with good works. We've already covered that scripture earlier, but I wanted to bring out the point that she is to adorn herself with good works. Now, when she reaches the age of 60, or in that vicinity, it should be said that this woman is well reported of for good works. Now, good works is a very broad area. It's a broad avenue. It includes a whole lot, and we're not being specific at all, other than we want to point out that this woman is to so conduct herself, she is to be of such a frame of mind that her behavior, her activities, her interests have been of such a nature that she is well reported of for good works. That would not be, of course, appropriate for her to have been involved in some questionable or shady or not good works. But it goes further than that. She not only cannot be guilty of bad works, she cannot be guilty of no works. For she's to be well reported of for good works. And then he has a semicolon after that word works, and he begins to name some of the things that she is to have done that would be classified as good works. Now, the first thing he names is, if she have brought up children. If she have brought up children. You know, in the society that we live in today, it is quite a popular thing and quite a now thing for a woman to have kind of lost this function of having brought up children. The women's livers, you know, they would like for a woman to just kind of get out here and be like and do like a man, and to be a career girl, so to speak. And they give very little regard for this great function in the life of having brought up children. And as we look about the biological and the sociological nature and workup of mankind, we see that it's just not according to nature. It's not according to the grand purpose of our being here for a woman to lose this function of being a mother, of bringing up children. But then as we read in the Bible here, where he says, if she have brought up children, then we just know that the whole thing aligns up right and correctly and in the perfect manner for a woman to have as one of her main obligations and duties and goals in life to have brought up children. And this is one of those things that he counts as good works. These children, they are going to be a major factor in the life. In particular, the life of the woman, the life of the wife. And this is one of her duties. It's one of the good works, one of the things she's to be well reported of for having brought up children. Now, of course, there are some women who are unable to have children for one reason or another, many reasons why they would not be able to have children. But to have the attitude and the frame of mind is, I want to be a mother. I want to bring up children. And then to go about whatever is necessary to be able to carry out that function, that's one of the good works. It's the first one that he names here. Having brought up children. And so we see that this woman then, who has children, is way far out and above and beyond the woman who has no desire for her and who does not bring up children. Who doesn't look upon that as one of her functions, as one of her goals, as one of her purposes in life. And you're getting outside of the bounds of nature. You're getting outside of the bounds of your reason for being. And we have other scriptures that bear this out too. But right now, let's just concentrate on this one phrase here. Having brought up children. Now, this includes a whole lot. It includes that love that she would have for them. It includes the time that she would dedicate to them. It includes the heartaches that go along with having children. It includes the fact that their life then becomes a part of your life. Their problems, their trials, their mistakes, their foolishness directly involves you. You're in it whether you like to be in it or not. And you can't just shut yourself off from it. You can't just say, well, they're making a mistake and so what? Because it's a part of you. And this is a part of that very nature then that goes along with having brought up children. And so regardless of what the world thinks about it, it may be the mod and the now and the modernistic thing to kind of get away from this thing of having children and bringing up children. But the Bible says this is one of the good works that a woman should be well reported of for. Then the second thing is, if she have lodged strangers. If she have lodged strangers. And this is really talking about the providing of hospitality. This is the providing of hospitality to persons who are not members of the family. It's not a part of her duty as a mother, her duty as a wife, but it's somebody who is not a member of the family that he's referring to here as a stranger, that she would extend hospitality to. Now this thing of hospitality, of course, it extends, of course, to the man as well as it does to the woman. And one of the qualifications for a bishop is that he be a lover of hospitality, or that he be one who would provide hospitality. But as we think about hospitality, and if we think about a man who would love hospitality, or who would be able to extend hospitality, I believe the wording is given to hospitality, we must not forget about the fact that it is, when hospitality comes, it is primarily the wife who is giving the hospitality. She's the one who is providing the place for this stranger to lodge. When it comes down to the, you know, the cleaning of the room and the making up of the bed and the making the arrangements for the household to make provisions for this person who's going to stay, or these persons, and the cooking of the meals and the planning of the whole family routine. She's the one who's involved in that. And so the man may get all the credit and all the glory for being one who's given the hospitality and who extends all kinds of hospitality, but it's the wife who does all the work, the wife who makes all the arrangements, and really the man gets the glory, and he also gets the benefit of the joy of visiting and associating with the person who's staying, but the wife does the work and makes the provisions, and she's the one who really then is lodging the strangers. A lot of times we don't realize all this great amount of work that goes into this. I know for years and years we've had a Bible study in our home on Tuesday evening. And the family carries out its ordinary routine for the day. You work hard and you might get in late. And if the Bible study starts at 7, you get in just in time to barely get supper eaten, and they barely get the dishes washed, and they get all the chairs out and get all the floor vacuumed, and you may start at 7 that morning trying to get everything in ready for the Bible study. But when everybody gets there, it looks like, well, everything's all ready. We just come in and sit down, and we have a Bible study, and Norman has done the study, and he's given the lesson, and everything is fine, you know. Look at the work that's been done. But they don't see the work that's done behind the scenes to make the preparation and to make the provision for it. And so, this is one of those good works. If she have lodged stranger, that is, if she has provided her house as a place of hospitality. And the woman does the work, and the Bible and God recognize that as being one of her functions. Then he says, if she have washed the saints' feet. If she have washed the saints' feet. Now this washing the saints' feet seems to me to be one of many, or one of several acts of assistance that this woman could extend to somebody else. Here, he names the saints' feet. And there are those who would want to take this activity and try to make it a worship function of the church, one of the items of worship that the church is to carry out in its form of worship to God. But let's notice what it means here to wash the saints' feet. The washing of the feet is certainly an act of not only of hospitality, but it's also an act of humility. The feet being the lowliest part of the body, and during the day that Paul wrote this, much of the travel was done on foot. It was done in sandy country, and they wore sandals, and their feet would be sweaty and dirty. And so one of the prime acts of hospitality and the prime assistance you give to somebody would be to wash their feet, or to provide a way for the feet to be washed. And the woman would be involved in these acts of assistance to others. Now, the fact as to whether or not it's an item of worship, it was never given to the church as an item of worship. We never see where the church did this in a public assembly to God, or where it was ever commanded. Christ did do this to his disciples on the night that they instituted the Lord's Supper, and he indicated that they should follow this same example that he'd done unto them, so that it doesn't mean that it's not to be done, but whether it should be done as an act of worship, let's stop and consider. If it is an act of worship, why is it included in this list of good works for these widows indeed? For if the washing of the saints' feet is a good work, and it's an act of worship, then so also would the keeping of the communion be a good work and an act of worship, and the singing of songs to God would be an act of worship and a good work, and the praying to God would be the same. And so all of those things should be listed, if one is to be listed, if it is an act of worship. So it's not put here to imply that it's an act of worship at all. If it were, then there would be some other things right along by the side of it, demanding equal time and equal space and equal recognition as being good works by the woman. But if she is a godly person, it's well understood that she's going to be carrying out the items of worship to God. They do not have to be enumerated here individually or pick one out and specify it. If she is a servant of God, she's going to be carrying out the items of worship anyway. That's understood. That's a part of the general good work that she'd be doing. Well, the next thing it says, if she have relieved the afflicted. If she have relieved the afflicted. Now, there are many ways in which a person can be afflicted. You can be afflicted physically. You can have health problems. You can have financial problems. You can have family problems. You can have mental distress. You can have religious questions and doubts and problems there. Many ways that a person can be considered to be afflicted. But yet this woman, and whatever opportunity that she has, she works at relieving the afflicted. Now, you know, this may be anything from cooking some food and taking it to a bereaved household during the time of grief of after the death of a loved one. This could be going over and visiting somebody who is discouraged, who is downcast in some way. That could be relieving the affliction. And, you know, as I look at the situation, one of the greatest areas of affliction that we have today, and this might be true for all of mankind, but one of the greatest areas of affliction today is just simply mental distress. Persons who are highly anxious, or persons who may be depressed, or persons who have problems that are pressing and there just doesn't seem to be any solution to it, and the problem heaped upon problem, and this is a great, great source of affliction. And we may overlook the fact, but a woman can serve a very vital function in helping to relieve that distressed condition. Just to go over and talk to the person. I don't mean to go and deliver a lecture or to go and give all of the answers to the person's ills or to go and philosophize and bore them with your great amount of knowledge and your little trite sayings and phrases. But I mean to go over and be a true friend and to have a true sympathetic ear and be able to listen to what this person is saying. Because there is something about human problems that requires that we be able to share them with somebody else. Not that the person has any solution, but just to be able to share them with another human being, many times, is a very, very great way to help solve and to help carry that affliction. So women maybe need to recognize their abilities in this area. I have people come into the office many times, and they've got all kinds of problems, and it's a great benefit to them if they can just share it with another human, somebody who is maybe not even really interested, not able to help them really, not able to solve any of their problems, but just to know that they've unloaded on somebody. And many times a person can't unload on those that are real close to them. It just doesn't seem to get the job done. But women, it seems to me, could fulfill a vital function right here, if nothing else. And so just many areas in which a woman could say that, or could endeavor to relieve the afflicted. Giving somebody a garment, or making a dress, or seeing a need here and being able to provide it. That's really what it amounts to. And that's one of the good works now that he names here. And it says, if she have diligently followed every good work. James says that to him that knoweth to do good, doeth it not, to him it's sin. So every good work, she's going to diligently follow this. And it means then that she will also have a knowledge of what good works are, what constitutes good works, so that she can diligently follow every good work. We're not talking about a woman now that's been idle, a woman that sat around with her arms folded and nothing to do, a woman who just entertained herself. We're talking about a woman who has used her resources, her abilities. She has used herself in the service of others. Now what does he name here? If she had brought up children, lodged strangers, washed the saints' feet, relieved the afflicted. Every one of these things is an area in which she has worked toward the good of somebody else, some other human being, a saint, a child, an afflicted, and a stranger. So she is the type of person then that uses her abilities toward the helping of other people. It's just down to be real simple when you look right at it. It's no complicated thing. A lot of times we can just use our own intuition and see where we can be of a benefit to somebody. Well, as we go on in this passage, he says, but the younger women, widows refuse, for when they've begun to wax wanton against Christ, they will marry, having damnation because they've cast off their first faith. And withal, they learn to be idle. Now, just as we learn from this passage what a woman is to do in her duties, we also learn from this passage what a woman is not to do. Still a part of her duties. And as we learn what not to do, that's as much of a benefit as it is to learn what to do. Just as the shadowy side of the sundial aids as much in telling the time as the sunny side does. So, and withal, they learn to be idle. Now this is the woman who's cast off her first faith. She's not doing what she should. Learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house. And not only idle, but tattlers also, and busybodies, speaking things which they ought not. Now we get into another big area here of the duties of women. They are not to be idle. Idleness is simply a condition in which this person is going to replace good with bad. That's true of anybody. You just cannot be idle and be acceptable to God. Idle is doing nothing. And really, you're not doing nothing. Everybody's doing something, but what he means is you're not doing anything that's beneficial. And then he says, and not idle only. Now, you stop being just in this condition of being idle, but then they become tattlers also and busybodies. Now, tattler is somebody who is telling tales, bearing tales. And a busybody is somebody who is involved in somebody else's business that is really not their affair at all, and they have no right to be there in their business. Tattlers and busybodies. And then he says, speaking things which they ought not. Now, there are several ways that we can apply this. This going about from house to house. You know, in this day and time, you don't have to go from house to house to be a tattler and a busybody. We have a thing known as a telephone that can be greatly abused. And I suppose that the tattling and the busybodying went on a great increase whenever the telephone came into widespread use, because it is common and known that the telephone is an instrument that is used just to gossip, just to run somebody down, just to tell some kind of a fantastic tale about somebody, and just to keep a lot of stuff going that is of no benefit to anybody, and really it amounts to speaking things which they ought not. They are saying things that they ought to be quiet about. We're still talking about the duties of wives now. And you know, one of the things that enters into my mind as a gauge that we can use to see just how capable we are along this line, this is not just only to women, this would apply to men as well as women. And that's one of the benefits of studying this, because everybody's getting a benefit from it. But one of the things you can use as a gauge is a little test you can give yourself. And that is, am I able? Am I capable of keeping a secret? Is it possible for me to know something about somebody? Maybe it's something that they have divulged to me in a confidential manner, or maybe it's something that I found out and they had no power over keeping me from finding out about it. But is it possible for me to keep it a secret and not tell anybody? Not tell my husband, or if I'm a husband, not tell my wife, not tell any friend, not tell any associate. Nobody knows this secret that I know about this other person. Is it possible for me to do it? Am I capable of it? Well, the only way that you'll know if you're capable is for you to have done it. For you to be doing it maybe right now. Is there a juicy bit of information about somebody that you know would just really light up somebody else's ears if you told them? They'd really perk up and listen and get attention. Is there something that you know like that you have never told anybody? You just said, I'm not going to pass this on any further. Now that's a pretty good test. In the business of being a doctor, occasionally we learn things about persons that maybe they are ashamed of, maybe they wished it hadn't happened, but it's happened, and they're in a bad situation because of it, and nobody knows about it. Are we capable of not telling anybody else about it? And that's a real test. And I'm sure that there are many, many people who can't think of anything like that they have never told. They just haven't kept it to themselves. They're not capable of doing it. This is a test. We ought to be of such a nature that if we come across some information about somebody that gets into that area of being a skeleton in the closet, so to speak, that we're capable of just being mum about it. Then, and only then, can we say that we're not a tattler, that we're not a busybody, and that we're not speaking things which we ought not. That's the only time we can say that. So in verse 14, he says, I will therefore that the younger women marry. Here again, we're looking at the duties of wives. And the ideal state, the ideal duty for the younger women is to be married. I will that they marry. Bear children. Now he's already talked about having brought up children, and this goes right along with the same thing. If she's able, she bears children. And if she's not able, then she still has this attitude, this disposition, this frame of mind, as I want to raise children, bear children, guide the house. And we're going to learn in another passage in Titus where she's to be a keeper at home. But she guides the house. That is, she oversees, She takes some kind of a leadership, some kind of a responsibility and obligation for seeing that the affairs of the house are carried on. She guides the house. Give none occasion to the adversary to speak reproachfully. Now she conducts herself in such a manner that the adversary, who of course would be the devil, doesn't have any occasion to speak reproachfully against her. She doesn't give any occasion for it. She conducts herself in a proper manner. She's not an idle, nor a tattler, nor a busybody, nor is she wandering about from house to house. But she is involved, she is engaged in productive activities that are known as good works, and nobody has any opportunity to speak reproachfully about her because of her actions. So we see that this area now of dwelling with them according to knowledge can be a kind of a broad area. There's a lot to know. There's a lot of knowledge to be acquired as to how husbands and wife are to deal with each other and how they're to behave themselves in this marriage relationship. Well, the next scripture, let's look at 1 Timothy 2, beginning with the 11th verse. We've already studied verses 9 and 10. In like manner also that women adorn themselves in modest apparel, with shamefacedness and sobriety, not with broidered hair or gold or pearls or costly array, but which becometh women professing godliness with good works. We've discussed that in an earlier lesson, but it's still in this same passage of 1 Peter 3 that we've discussed that passage. But now as he goes on talking about the women, in verse 11, he says, let the woman learn in silence with all subjection. Let her learn in silence with all subjection. He's talking about the assembly of the church here is what he's really talking about. Back in verse 8 he says, I will that men pray everywhere, lifting up holy hands without wrath and doubting. Talking about how men are to pray. And then he says, in like manner also that women adorn themselves. So this is still talking about the attitude that men and women have in the worship service. And so now in verse 11, let the women learn in silence with all subjection.